Hey, Unnaturalists, I'm Andy.
And I'm Ryan.
And welcome back to Unnatural.
Hello.
Are you gearing up for April, Ryan? You got any spring or summer plans for you and the kiddos? Or
just going to try to have some fun.
Okay. Keep it vague. I get it.
Everything costs money, Andy.
Right.
What I need to plant is a money tree.
I'm not much of a big planner. I usually leave that to other people. I'm more spontaneous with my travel and all of that stuff anyway.
Yeah, so is my husband. And it doesn't usually work out in our favor financially. That's the thing. Like, he keeps me fun.
Yeah.
And I keep things balanced, you
right.
know? Like, we all have to bring something to the table and we all work it out. It becomes a problem if y'all can't get on the same page.
Mm-hmm. It's all about balance. And speaking of going on vacation or going on holiday, today we're going to kind of do that. And to kick off the show today, Ryan, I'm going to give you a quick assignment. Are you all right with this? I know you were told there would be no homework. I encourage our listeners to do the same thing here. Just because I think it'll provide a little context as to where on earth we're dealing with in this episode, literally. So, Ryan, if you could pull up Google Earth, or you could just Google the name of this place for me. It's called the Palmyra Atoll National Wildlife Refuge.
Okay. I have it here.
Okay.
There's a lagoon.
If you zoom out just to see like where on earth it is, that's where it's just mind blowing.
Oh my gosh. Like, this is in the middle of nowhere.
Right. Like the middle of nowhere.
That's what I was saying when I was like, I am still scrolling out.
Right.
What am I looking at right now? It's water.
Yeah. Water everywhere. And I know people often say somewhere can be out in the middle of nowhere, but as you're looking at this, these islands are the literal embodiment of that, as they are almost in the exact center of the vast Pacific Ocean, the biggest ocean on Earth.
You are not kidding.
Right?
But
it's just crazy that people even go to these islands. But over 3,000 miles to the southwest of the U.S. mainland and 3,000 miles to the northeast of New Zealand. So it's an extremely isolated area that doesn't even have any permanent settlement on any of its islands. The U.S. claimed it in the World War II era, and these days it's primarily used as a scientific station for most of the year. But believe it or not, Palmyra is also the home of a gruesome murder. It would not seem like the place where you would ever think of a murder happening, but it did. And it took place in the 1970s on one of the most remote places on Earth, and a crime that has left a wider world baffled as to what exactly took place there for decades now. This is the story of the Palmyra Beach murders. Just as a side note, this place looks like paradise. It's 80 degrees year-round, surrounded by beautiful beaches, coconut trees, exotic wildlife. And because of that, it does draw in some tourists. Now, who are these tourists, you wonder? Well, these are very, yes, they're very, very rich people. Rich enough to own their own boats. And they travel to this island paradise. Typically, they travel down from Hawaii, which is around 1,000 miles to the north. So it's quite a journey just to get there from Hawaii. But a lot of people do that on their yachts. And that's exactly what brought 43-year-old Malcolm Graham III and his 40-year-old wife, Eleanor, to the island chain in August of 1974. I know why you laughed there, because we were just talking about rich people, and then I say Malcolm Graham III. You don't hear a lot of...
old money. Trust fund baby.
You don't hear a lot of poor people going by the third.
It's not usually we want to cut off our associations. We don't want anybody to know who we are.
So true. So Malcolm and Eleanor sailed their 38-foot sailboat named the Sea Wind out of port in Honolulu and made the 1,200-mile journey to Palmyra. They had been preparing for this for months, and it was their goal to stay on the deserted island for maybe even a year or more. You know what? Let's just sail our sailboat to a deserted island and camp there for a year. I can't even imagine what kind of life that is.
I'm trying to choose kindness.
Right? Well, and yes, you should, because what happens to them is not good. But
he is, yeah, they are deceased.
Yeah.
I don't want to embarrass myself here.
Right. But when they got there, the island already had visitors. Also anchored at Palmyra was another couple, Wesley Walker and Stephanie Stearns. And by all accounts, Ryan, these accounts being from other passersby who happened to briefly come in contact with them, and they were going in and out of the islands, just dropping by, the two couples did not get along. As I mentioned, the Grahams were pretty well-to-do, and Wesley and Stephanie were not. Now, they were described as hippies, but I don't really think the term fits, as they didn't exactly embody the hippie lifestyle. Let's just say they were more blue-collar, as opposed to the Grahams being white-collar. Wesley and Stephanie had also sailed from Hawaii on their ship, the Iola. But their boat was in bad, bad shape. And Stephanie was not an experienced navigator. And the fact that she was even able to make it to the island at all was pretty remarkable. To contrast that, the Graham's sailboat, the Sea Wind, was top of the line. It had all of the latest furnishings, the latest amenities and machinery on board, and it was well equipped for any long outing on the ocean. And while the voyage for the Grahams to Palmyra was, by all accounts, smooth sailing, Stephanie and Wesley's voyage was anything but, as it took them 19 long days to get there, and their wooden boat started sprouting leaks halfway through the journey. But luckily, they did have enough fiberglass on the boat to patch up the leaks. A first impression can go a long way, and the first impression the Grahams had of Wesley and Stephanie was, in one word, uneasy. This may seem a bit trivial, but Wesley asked Malcolm for a smoke, and when Malcolm handed him the pack, he took almost half of the cigarettes. Now, that might be kind of annoying in real life, but in island culture, that's seen as a great insult, as everything you have is limited. It's all finite. You don't have never-ending resources. Wesley Walker was also an ex-convict who was on the run, fleeing.
Oh.
Yeah. He was trying to get away from a drug possession charge, and he had convinced Stephanie to sail him to Palmyra so he could grow enough cannabis to support himself. I mean, maybe in a perfect world, I guess, but not when you're fleeing from the law.
Sounds like a real winner.
Yeah, right. And unlike the Grahams, who had over a year's worth of supplies on board on the Sea Wind, Wesley and Stephanie only had a few meager provisions aboard the Iola. They were even resorted to eating the coconuts on the island. And for some reason, this part just pissed me off. they would chop down the trees entirely rather than just grabbing the coconuts off the branches.
That's some white people shit.
It's like you easily could just go up there and get the coconuts.
That's such colonizer behavior.
And it's like an island paradise and you're just chopping all the trees down. Just terrible.
Those people can't think farther out than the end of their nose.
Right. Wesley, who, by the way, was also known as Buck, and that's what I'm going to call him from now on. Buck and Stephanie were seen as more and more of a nuisance to not just the Grahams, but other passersby on the island, as they would continually ask them for provisions, ask them for help with their campsites, try to barter things off of their boats for anything they could get. And they did this with the Grahams as well. The Grahams were considered generous, but like I said before, they did feel uneasy about Buck and Stephanie, and other passersby even warned them not to get too friendly, as the couple would almost certainly try to take advantage of their hospitality and try to exploit it to their own advantage. However, whether it was a sense of guilt or just trying to make peace with their neighbors on the island, the Grahams did eventually, after about 2 weeks, invite Buck and Stephanie onto their yacht. It was said that the couple was mesmerized by all of the amenities and state-of-the-art features on the Sea Wind, and Stephanie even commented on how beautiful it was and how much she loved the big bunk in the forward cabin. But Buck, on the other hand, appeared to be a bit gloomy and indifferent towards it all. As you can imagine, Buck wasn't much of a farmer, and he failed to grow any cannabis on the island. Things were looking bad as they were running out of their coconuts, and the auxiliary engine on their sailboat wasn't really working properly, leaving them, for all intents and purposes, stuck on Palmyra. Not exactly the kind of place you want to be stuck, since hardly anybody ever goes there. But as it turns out, one other couple did go there. On August 16th, Norman Sanders and Thomas Wolfe were on their way to Samoa, and the night before they were to set sail, Malcolm and Eleanor invited them onto the Sea Wind for a cocktail and dinner. And eventually, they got around to talking about the Iola, and Norman, being somewhat of a sailing expert, had spoken to Buck about helping him sail the ship to the Samoan Islands and maybe even help be his guide. Buck, though, wasn't hearing any of this and completely dismissed Norm and was even said to have gotten angry with him, so much so that Norman gave up entirely trying to help him and Stephanie. Thomas Wolfe warned Malcolm and Eleanor about Buck and said that it wouldn't be difficult for Buck to turn his anger onto them and take the Sea Wind. At which point, Malcolm casually opened a drawer in the cabin and pulled out a .357 Magnum, saying, quote, "I can take care of myself. I'm tougher than he is," end quote. Thomas Wolfe and Norman Sanders left the next day. In fact, all of the other boats that had been passing by left too, as it was August 17th, the end of the season, and most sailboats wouldn't be stopping at Palmyra for several months after that. Malcolm and Eleanor Graham were now alone on the island with Buck Walker and Stephanie Stearns. On August 30th, Buck told Stephanie that the Grahams had invited the couple over to the boat, the Sea Wind, for dinner that night. Maybe kind of a peace offering. Now, they go over to the boats around 6:30 that night, but nobody was on board. However, Buck told Stephanie that the Grahams had told him that if they weren't back from fishing by the time they arrived, to kind of help themselves and make themselves at home, and they would be back there shortly to greet them. So that's what they did. They had a great night, ate all of their food, and wined and dined on the Sea Wind. Evening turned to night, night turned to morning, and there was still no sign of the Grahams. Buck and Stephanie went out looking for them the next morning and found a boat overturned in a lagoon. It was kind of one of those smaller boats. And the two of them surmised that the Grahams must have had a fatal fishing accident in the lagoon and didn't make it out alive. So Buck and Stephanie then make the decision to sail the Grahams' boat, the Sea Wind, all the way back to Hawaii. Sound a little fishy at all yet? Or
sounds a little too opportunistic to me.
Yep, exactly. Now, when they got back to Hawaii, they initially told authorities that their boat, the Iola, had gotten stuck in a coral reef, and that's why they came back in the Sea Wind. Stephanie Stearns later admitted to investigators that they had stolen the Sea Wind.
Yeah, that sounds a little bit more likely. Yeah.
And once Hawaiian authorities made the journey down to Palmyra themselves, they strongly suspected that foul play was involved and that Buck, along with Stephanie, as his possible accomplice, had murdered the Grahams. But no bodies were found, and there was little hard evidence of any kind of foul play, let alone a murder. So, as we've talked about in previous cases, when you don't have any evidence and it's just circumstantial, it's almost impossible to charge somebody with homicide. That's just not the way the justice system works. And I think that's probably a good thing. I know there's a lot of terrible things that come along with this, but it is a fail-safe, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I agree.
So
it's just harder to catch the shady ones.
Right. So instead, they just charged them with theft of the boat, and the two of them both did time for theft of the Sea Wind. And the case kind of almost fades into oblivion right there. Except for the fact that 7 years later, in 1981... a South African couple who was visiting the island found a human skull and other bones that had fallen out of an old metal box and onto the sand near where the Grahams' boat had been. Quite the coinkydink.
Box? Where was the metal box?
It had been in the ocean, presumably, and it had fallen into the sand on the beach. And then the bones fell out of the box onto the sand. The bones were taken back to Hawaii and were identified as Eleanor's. Upon forensic investigation, it was determined that Eleanor had been hit over the head, burned in the face with a welding torch, and eventually dismembered altogether. Just a horrible, horrible way to die.
Oh my God.
Like, that is brutal. And that shows that...
Was it post-mortem dismemberment?
Doesn't say. I'm assuming it was post-mortem. But I think the welding torch in the face was presumably while she was still alive. So
unless they were trying to, like... So the blowtorch, they're assuming, was before death.
Yeah. And again, that's just... Because
they didn't, I guess we don't know if they were maybe trying to hide her identity, but then decided this isn't going to work. We're going to have to actually like hide the body.
And that's what I'm thinking, because after her body was eventually dismembered, then it was stuffed into this metal box, weighted down and thrown into that lagoon. And that's where
why do they always do that shit?
Yeah. I mean, look. Not that I would ever be a murderer, but if I were, I probably would have taken the boat far out into the ocean and thrown the body, you know, instead of
right in that lagoon. Yeah, you don't even need a metal box.
Yeah, but anyway, that's what they did. They weighted it down and threw it into the lagoon, and that's where it stayed until 1981, when a storm brought it back up and emptied its horrifying contents onto the beach for that South African couple to see. It's almost like karma was intervening there.
Crazy.
Because the storm just happens to bring the body up right before that couple gets there. It's crazy how that happened. But Malcolm's body, by the way, was never found. It was assumed that his body was also stuffed in a metal box, but for whatever reason, it never floated to the surface. So Buck Walker and Stephanie Stearns were charged with murder as soon as this was found, and they were tried separately for the murder of Eleanor. In 1985, Buck was found guilty and incarcerated at the Victoriaville Penitentiary in California. Stephanie Stearns, believe it or not, was actually acquitted for the murder, as her defense attorney successfully argued that Buck had committed the murders completely on his own and that Stephanie had no knowledge of the crime. Her defense attorney actually wrote a book on the case, and there was a miniseries that aired covering it as well. I guess it was on CBS in the early 90s. My parents probably watched it. And one thing that stood out is that her attorney said he was actually shocked and he was kind of taken aback by Stephanie Stearns' lack of gratitude after the verdict. I didn't know what to make of that, because that could just be him being like an egomaniac.
I was going to say, that sounds a little egotistical, sir.
How dare you not give me gratitude? Look what I did for you. Or it could be trying to say maybe she had no empathy going on. I don't know. There's a couple different things you could read into that, you know?
Well, she also, if she felt that she truly did not deserve to go to jail or prison because of this, then maybe that would cause you to not express gratitude
100%.
Necessarily, because you're like, you
knew didn't do anything wrong.
The truth the whole time. So yeah. what I was thinking is, like, it sounds pretty likely that maybe she wasn't involved in the actual murder of these people. That
yeah.
It's very likely that he did go and do this himself.
Yeah.
And then she had to just deal with it, because what? He just killed two people. She's got to get back to the mainland. Like, what else do you do?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking that maybe she found out the next day, or maybe even when they were boating back to Hawaii or something like that. I don't think she was involved in it, and I think she probably should have been acquitted. But she probably did eventually figure out what he had done. And it was probably at that moment that she was like, you know what? I don't think I should be with this guy anymore.
Self-preservation. Get the fuck out.
Right. Buck Walker ended up getting out of prison himself, believe it or not. And I had to reread this a few times, Ryan, as I assumed that he was going to be sentenced to life without parole at the very least. But he was indeed released back in 2007 after serving 22 years of a life sentence. He died of a stroke in 2010 at the age of 72. And before he died, he claimed in a book, and get this, it seems pretty far-fetched to me, Ryan, but I'll let you be the judge. He claimed that Mrs. Graham had seduced him on the island, and while they were in the middle of their lovemaking, Mr. Graham found them, shot his wife, then attempted to shoot Buck, but Buck killed him first. Please tell me you don't believe that.
I don't know what's real anymore.
Yeah. No, here, I'll tell you what happened. Here what happened. I saw her.
I was getting lucky.
She seduced
me. And then
me. She wanted me. So I said, yeah, let's get it on. And we start getting it on. And then her husband comes and tries to kill her. And he kills her. And then I kill him. That's what happened.
Post-coital murder.
This fucking guy.
This fucking guy.
God. So there we go. If you have any ideas of any interesting places you would like us to cover, like places that you would never expect a murder to take place, let us know. Find us on our socials. You can find us on Instagram, Unnatural the Podcast. Check us out on Facebook, Unnatural True Crime Podcast, or send us an email, unnaturalthepodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to like, follow, and rate us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and we will talk to you next time. But in the meantime, be sure to make good choices.
And don't get got.
Okay, I'm gonna hit the hay here.
You gotta do the, well, I suppose.
Well, I suppose, time to hit the hay.
What a fucking Midwestern thing to say.
Yeah.
You gotta throw in the little knee slap, too, when you stand up. Well,
yeah,
I suppose.
Real knee
slapper. That's a sentence stopper right there. That's your period.
One time when I was in high school around my friends, I went to do the knee slap thing and I slapped myself in the crotch and my friend Sarah, she still brings it up to me like decades later, and she listens to the podcast sometimes, so I hope she's listening right now.
Outed.
That was a real knee slapper. Oh. Oh, tried to date her for a while. It didn't work out. Gee, I wonder why. Anyway, I don't want to be with some
guy. Depth perception's off.
I don't want to be with some guy that slaps himself in the crotch. Come on.
You know what? I do, because sometimes those uncoordinated fuckers are good at other things, you know? I need a man who's humble and can be humbled and take it with a little bit of humor.
Oh. Well. 'Wesley, who, by the way, was also known as Buck, and that's what I'm going to call him from now on, told Stephanie.
I don't know. Wesley Walker and Stephanie Stern, they sound like fucking weather people. Like now, that's their stage name or something.
Let's go to Stephanie Stern's with the weather, and now over to Wesley Walker with sports.
Did you not get that?
No, I do see it now. Yeah,
I got that vibe, yeah.
These do feel like fake names, but so,
unless they were trying to, like... Sorry, I just heard one of my kids scream. I was waiting to see if it was about to escalate.
Multitask. Ryan is multitasking.
I am...
That's your life.
Both listening all the time and not paying any attention.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. I know a lot of our longtime listeners miss Emily. And back in December, Emily decided to take a break from the podcast, which I totally supported. I wanted to keep doing it. And she did say that at some point she's going to come back, maybe not in the same capacity that she was in the beginning, but she'll still be around every once in a while. In fact, in a couple of weeks, we're hoping to have her back for our big 3-year anniversary. But I did want to give you an update on what Emily's been up to because it's very exciting. She is now a published author, and you can check out her new work. It is a book of poetry titled Behind Someone Else's Door. You can search for that on Amazon. It's only $10, and it really shows what type of writer she is. If you listened to any of her podcast episodes before, you know how engaging she can be. And this stuff is visceral and from the heart. The book overview states, quote, Behind Someone Else's Door is a debut poetry and prose collection that paints scenes of emotions with eloquence and rawness. The verses tackle difficult subjects of heartbreak, unrequited love, mental illness, and more. Emily explores her emotions vividly and deeply, inviting the readers on a journey of self-discovery while capturing the essence of the human experience. Readers are invited to step inside and take a look behind someone else's door. Emily's not asking me to say any of this, but I know it would mean the world to her to have your support. So check it out on Amazon, Behind Someone Else's Door. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Are you intrigued by the dark side of things like murder, kidnapping, and sex cults? What about when the criminal is your favorite musician or actor or director or writer? Hollywood might look like all glitz and glamour until you take a closer look. But I'll tell you one thing, that kind of point of view can make you more vulnerable. From Roman Polanski to Mackenzie Phillips to Judith Barsi to Kurt Cobain, some are predators and some are prey. I'm Dee Dee West, and I just might ruin your childhood. Follow my podcast, Broken Limelight, where I cover celebrity true crime stories. For more information, visit BrokenLimelight.com. Again, that's Broken Limelight. Follow it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to your favorite podcasts.